Coming up on the Social Hour, Twitter announces its IPO via a tweet. Naturally, Facebook is testing video ads. Get scared. And Google Plus makes editing photos way easier. All that and more next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Audio bandwidth provided by the new Winamp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android. Bandwidth for the Social Hour is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, episode 128, recorded Friday, September 13th, 2013. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/social hour. And by Social Media Solutions from SAP. If you're a social media manager at a large enterprise, gain insight and engage in social media with Social Media Solutions from SAP to improve your customer service and support experience. Take a guided tour at sap.com/twit. And by Tonks Coffee. Tonks offers bi-weekly subscriptions. Tonks sources their beans directly from growers. They're roasted and shipped within 24 hours, giving you the freshest coffee beans in the world. For a free sample, visit tonks.org/social hour. That's tonx.org/social hour. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of The Social Hour. Happy Friday to our live viewers from Twit World Headquarters in Petaluma, California. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And Sarah, I have to tell you something that is kind of disgusting.
Oh, all right. Let's get this started.
So, you know how I told you I started drinking coffee again?
Yes.
So now I'm always dehydrated and I feel like I need to drink so much water. So I just filled up my awesome Twit mug here with water, but I didn't realize that it's been sitting on my shelf for a week and there are strange things in it. And I just took a giant gulp. So
Oh no.
I have that sick look on my face. That's probably why.
I think probably you're more likely to just have had a big gulp of some antibiotics naturally occurring in nature than anything else. But we'll pray for you.
I'm okay. Right. Okay, thank you. I can make it through the hour, but I just wanted to let you know.
I have to say, you really kept it together because you were like, I'm thirsty, I'm just going to get a glass of water. And then you sort of sat there and said, I have something really gross to tell you. I'd probably be dousing myself in mouthwash right now. Take it home for the team.
Oh, boy. Exactly.
Well, if you get dehydrated during the show, please feel free to get up and get some water. We don't want this to be dangerous.
No, I've turned off water now for a while. I think I'm good for the entire hour. Tons of stuff to talk about. Looking at the rundown, it seems like, quite big news this week, actually. Probably starting with one of our top stories about Twitter announcing their IPO via a tweet, which is obviously very appropriate.
Yeah, everybody sort of expected that Twitter would sooner than later be announced. The fact that they were going IPO, and in Twitter fashion, what more appropriate place than to announce it as a tweet? We've confidentially submitted an S-1 to the SEC for a planned IPO. This tweet does not constitute an offer of any securities for sale. It's kind of an interesting situation because Twitter is able to keep the specifics of some of its financials under lock and key in sort of a quiet period of sorts, not really an employee quiet period, but pre-IPO, which apparently has a lot to do with when a company makes under a certain amount in revenue. Mm-hmm. And it has spawned, there seems to be a lot of conversation going on about this. You know, a lot of people saying, congratulations, Twitter. You truly are, my number one news source, that sort of thing. And then people digging in a little bit deeper. There's a great All Things D article. In fact, All Things D in general is really on top of this Twitter story and has had great coverage since the news came out. Interesting. Talking about the growth problem that Twitter might have. There are a lot of reports that Twitter wanted to get to a certain amount of users by the end of this year. And if everything was on track, then they'd be on track for an IPO possibly at the end of the year or early next year. by all accounts, the company has missed its mark. So then it kind of turns into a conversation of, well, why now? Is now the right time for a Twitter IPO? You know, are they right at the height of their fame? Is it sort of a Facebook situation where after the IPO, it, you know, people have a lot of naysaying that goes around, but then the stock price comes back up, and in Facebook's case, things look pretty healthy after some time has passed. Amber, what are your initial thoughts on this?
Well, I don't think it's a surprise that they've announced this. I think, like you said, we've all been waiting for this to happen at some point. I feel somewhat as though it's a little bit early. I think in my mind, they would have probably figured out their advertising model somewhat further and developed that somewhat more. And I could imagine them maybe doing an IPO or announcing an IPO next year, mid next year. It doesn't feel to me like they have a really solid way of making money. Maybe there's something I don't know, but it seems like it's still early, even though they're such a popular service. They have so many users, but I don't see the emphasis on advertising revenue like I even see Facebook have that emphasis there.
Yeah, there are a couple of people in chat saying Twitter having a growth problem, that seems ridiculous. I mean, there are so many Twitter users, how could that be a bad thing? Well, you know, when you get to a company of Twitter size, and it's grown so much since its infancy. Last December, Twitter announced that it had more than 200 million active users. Okay, so CEO Dick Costolo said earlier this year, a few months after that number, that he expected the company to get to 400 million users by the end of 2013, so basically doubling those user numbers. Sources say, this is not coming from Twitter specifically, but sources familiar with the matter say Twitter now has around 240 million users, which, you know, if you sort of break it down into monthly numbers, means, sure, it's adding millions of users per month, but not at the rate that the company was hoping. Maybe that was a number that got thrown out, and it's just being used now to try to, you know, dampen the mood. But in general, it's possible that Twitter isn't growing as fast as the company wants to grow, and maybe that's why now is the right time. I mean, they wouldn't want growth to slow yet more, because then the IPO would look less attractive. It's all, you know, it's kind of a timing game, and also an interesting conversation to have. How's Twitter going to change when it becomes a public company and it's all about keeping the shareholders happy? Right now, I mean, it's backed by venture capitalists, so there are certainly people that you have to keep happy, but it's a lot fewer than what it's going to be once it's a public company, and money is of the ultimate goal, which can ruin a company. I mean, in Facebook's case, we're watching them very delicately walk that line of trying to introduce more and more streams of revenue, but not alienate the user base that it needs to keep.
I mean, I think especially with Twitter, because so many people do rely on Twitter as a news source, it would be so unfortunate if they did anything when the company goes public that really changed the experience. Because I think overall, it's a pretty great platform for people to get information. I still don't see where there's a huge opportunity on the advertising front. I mean, I know they have implemented some different ideas on the advertising, but I hope it doesn't change very much. And I think it does. If it does, they obviously risk, like Facebook does or has, losing some of their users over time. But right now, it seems it's such a simple service, right, Sarah? I mean, that's the thing I think that makes Twitter so great, is it's quite simple. It's a low investment as far as your time, and there's not a lot of spam. You kind of follow who you want to follow. And if they mess with that model, I mean, I guess people just have so many other choices now to go in the social space.
Exactly. So true.
So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
We will.
Yes. Speaking about Twitter, this is kind of an interesting announcement as far as Twitter unveiling a new feature for verified users. And this affects obviously a small percentage only of people who are on Twitter, but they will now give you features that allow you to do things like filter out tweets from people who are not verified. I don't know why you would ever want to do that. Even as a verified user, I can't even imagine the purpose of that. I don't know how you feel, Sarah, but I feel as though most of the great content that I get is not necessarily from verified users. It's just from a mix of everyone. I don't know if you saw The Verge, their headline on this. They said Twitter now lets verified elite filter out regular users. And that really kind of explains what they're trying to do here. Some other features as well for verified users. But again, just a small percentage of the overall users on Twitter.
Yeah, so I'm verified as well. I don't even really know why, because I think being verified is usually because you're some sort of a celebrity, or maybe you're impersonated by other people, and you just, well, I guess that could possibly be the case. But okay, so let's say I go to my little Connect tab here. I'm obviously using the web version of Twitter. So yeah, in my interactions area, I've got something, I've got my all, I've got my filtered, and then I've got my verified. So all is everything. These are people that have mentioned me, people who have retweeted me or followed me, favorited tweets of mine, and so on. That makes sense. If I go into the filtered tab here, this is, well, doesn't really look any different. I mean, the idea is if I had a lot of spam bots following me, that would be a Twitter algorithm that's designed to strip those out and make my life easier. Okay. But then if I go to verified, well, it cleans up quite a bit. So there are, you know, I've got you, Amber. I've got Russ Pitts, who writes for Polygon. Chris Sacca. Okay. Tom Merritt. It's like, well, I'm really going back a few days now. I mean, this is a very different Twitter experience. That's just me and a few other people. And I'm with you, Amber. I can't imagine ever wanting to look at that view because I'd miss almost everything.
Yeah, you'd miss almost everything. I don't think it's going to be all that useful, except for maybe if you are a big celebrity and you're only following other celebrities, and you know there are lots of celebrities, and I see them out there where they only follow, say, 50 people, and pretty much everybody's verified. So if you have that exclusive of a list of friends, and I guess you're narrow-minded in some ways as far as the type of content you're reading, I suppose that would be interesting. So perhaps they are offering this feature to really target the A-list kind of Twitter users who are very well-known. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense. And Sarah, I just wanted to bring up a tweet that we just got from Greg Sargent about Twitter advertising. And he's just mentioning that Twitter advertising has a huge opportunity for growth if they can target ads by zip code. So I just wanted to bring that up because that's a pretty good point, I thought.
Yeah, that's true. That's a very good point.
It is a good point. I mean, I think that could be interesting.
The verified thing is, I agree with you that it's probably, I mean, I think around 50,000 people are verified, so a tiny amount of people. I mean, it's really, really small. But it doesn't make sense for you and I to ever use this. I don't really care who's verified or not. It's not even anything I pay any attention to. But yeah, I guess if you're a celebrity and Twitter wants to make sure that those people who have millions of followers don't feel like, looking at replies is such a, you know, exercise in futility, I'll never make sense of this. And some of these, you know, the spam accounts, the, you know, Justin Bieber 123XX or whatever, Twitter's not for me. I guess that would be a way of stripping that out. But you think stripping the spam out is one thing, but only conversating with other elite Twitter users, I guess it would be fun if you only care about talking to a few people, but you could almost put them in a list or something.
And you have to imagine that so many of these people who would use something like this, they're not even managing their own Twitter accounts. They have a person or a team of people who are monitoring what's happening. And for those people, is it really that important that they're being followed and reacted to by just regular user or by verified users? I would assume that there'd be a bigger impact if you're a big artist or a celebrity, movie star, for example, that the mass population is liking what you're doing, because who cares if another star likes it, right? So I don't know. It seems a little silly, but they are kind of following suit. We've talked about Facebook before, how they do have some VIP services for people that have pretty prestigious followings on Facebook. So it seems like this is Twitter in some ways playing a bit of catch up to really appeal to those people who really just cared about the verified experience.
I guess so. You know, PC Guy makes a good point in chat, says, yeah, why not filter out the spam for everybody via an option?
Of course.
Like, who wants the option turned off, right? It's like, why isn't that spam algorithm just part of the experience the way it is, you know, in my Gmail, for example? That would be great.
Mm-hmm. Unless they're testing it out. I don't know.
Who knows? That's true. It's probably something that, yeah, if extremely effective, just probably would be turned on by default. Well, you know, you mentioned Facebook, Amber, and turns out that we might see a lot more video on Facebook, but not necessarily video you want to see.
Yeah, this is kind of weird. So I've seen this article all over the web today talking about Facebook testing out autoplay for mobile video. So if someone posts a video, let's say an Instagram video in the your newsfeed, then that would automatically play as you're scrolling down. Of course, it would be muted, but you would see it playing. Many people say that this is leading up to Facebook having video advertisements in your newsfeed, getting people used to being able to see those advertisements. I am not a fan of video autoplay in any respect, on any website, in any mobile experience. I think it's horrible. I hate when things autoplay. I don't know about you, Sarah, but I think this is just adding to the clutter of Facebook already. I mean, if I want to see a video, I'm pretty sure that I can click on it. I don't need it to just automatically start. It seems irritating to me.
I agree with you. Although the fact that it is muted and you would have to unmute it is certainly the right way to go. I mean, if we have to have autoplay video ads or videos in general, but yes, assuming that ads are going to be part of this. So what they want you to do is kind of pause on the video and be like, is this from a friend? Oh, it's an ad. Oh, whoops, I watched it. That's one thing. But if I can't hear it, I'm way less annoyed. The things, I was saying this exact same thing on TNT this morning, the things I hate the most about ads on the internet is the obnoxious sound effects. If there's a video playing on a page, you know, maybe I've scrolled down and I realize there's some autoplay thing happening and I can hear it. Boy, it drives me crazy. But the videos themselves being, especially because this is going to be part of a mobile experience. It's not like, oh, well, if you're looking at desktop Facebook, sure, there's going to be some autoplay stuff, but that won't be in your Facebook app. It will. In fact, this is exactly where Facebook wants this stuff to work.
Yeah, I just think it's one of those things. I do watch some videos on Facebook that people post, but I don't find it something that I do really on a regular basis. I'm just not a big fan of this. I don't think this is going to win over users. I think advertisers may like it. Obviously, it's an opportunity for them to be seen in the newsfeed. And then that, of course, affects view counts with videos. If you're an advertiser, one of the big issues is that you can't get people to click on your video ads, whether it's in mobile or just on the web. But with something like this, all of a sudden, when you autoplay, that changes your stats. So Facebook can say that they are giving more value because, you know, a million people saw your video. But I think the autoplay functionality is just somewhat misleading because really that's Facebook is forcing that on you. So it doesn't seem to have any authenticity in it whatsoever, which I think is something that people online and advertisers should respect a little bit more.
Agreed. And there's some points being made with our live viewers in chat that, you know, this could end up being a bandwidth issue. I think Facebook has said, or some developers have said who work at Facebook, well, no, we're it's not actually going to be any sort of a drain on your system. But it has to be. I mean, there's a difference between moving images and a static image. There just is. It's more bandwidth intensive. And that's something that, you know, people are, if it ends up being a huge issue and people can point to Facebook video ads as the source of anything that could charge them more money or, you know, somehow deplete their phone quicker, people are going to be really upset about that.
Yeah, they definitely are. But I don't know. I think there will be backlash with this. And again, I think Facebook is just experimenting. Like one of our viewers right now who is watching Datalore mentions that Twitter is also experimenting. I mean, they're just trying to figure out who's going to win the race, who's going to win over advertisers with their platform, who's going to be ahead of the curve. And at the end of the day, Sarah, I wish we were having a conversation about just better content.
Yeah.
You know, how to create better video content for mobile ads, how to create better tweets and content that's compelling. And yet it seems like everybody's going to try to trick users into watching, even if they're not interested. And I just think this is going entirely the wrong direction.
Yeah. Video ads are, you know, the best thing that YouTube ever introduced is skipping video ads before the video that I'm actually wanting to watch.
Yes.
I mean, I never, ever sit through anything if I have the option to skip. And so it's like, and it's funny because I have talked to people who work there who say, well, that's really helpful because then we know which ads you don't respond to. And it's like, but I won't respond to any of them ever. I'm programmed that way. If I have to sit through something that I'll like, I don't know, look away or like look at my Instagram feed for the 20 seconds that I have to. I mean, I'm really, really trying to get away from them. And I know that there are a lot of people who work in advertising who might say, well, hey, we're trying. You know, we're trying to do the right thing here. And we're trying new methods of, you know, new mediums and all that stuff. But it's like, I don't feel like this is the answer.
It feels lazy to me. I mean, you have so many companies, so many brands who are getting creative with how they are creating video content, whether it's branded content. I know we have an example from Chipotle later on in the show, but you see people really coming up with clever ideas, clever content to go back to this whole idea that people actually want to sit through commercials essentially online when we were trying endlessly to avoid them on television just seems somewhat dated. So, definitely not a big fan of this. This is kind of interesting, though, Sarah. Speaking of broadcasting, Google Plus Hangouts has added a live Q&A for broadcasters. This is an app. So if you're doing a live broadcast and doing some type of Hangout, you now have the ability to more easily manage question and answers. So it allows you to reply if you've answered a certain question and just keep track of some of the questions that are coming in. Also, viewers can vote on questions. So I think it increases that collaboration. The only negative on this is that you do have to be logged into Google Plus to use this app and mm-hmm. to participate. But I think this is moving us closer to broadcasters really being able to have a phenomenal platform in Google Plus and their Hangouts.
Yeah, this is something I'd love to incorporate this into what we do. The Google Plus Hangouts with live Q&A is some sort of a hybrid between what you and I are doing via Skype right now and our live chat room that can ask questions. And
exactly.
I guess Q&A is really just questions for the host or hosts that might be hosting a Hangout. But it's the same idea. You know, it's kind of like Reddit AMA come to life, where mm-hmm. you could be on your stream and answering questions. And yeah, the most popular questions get voted up and end up floating to the top. I think this is a great idea, especially because there are a lot of reasons you might just turn on a Hangout here and there to, I don't know, pull your audience, your community.
I think we are literally months away from a broadcaster, whether they're an internet broadcaster or a traditional television broadcaster, using Google Plus Hangouts in a way where they're just kind of breaking through the noise and there's something that is just phenomenal as far as an experience that is collaborative and has the audience participating. Because I think we're so close to people seeing the potential of this platform. I haven't seen it in use where I thought, wow, you know, it really has that amazing wow factor. But I think that we're getting there. I mean, I'm just amazed every day. Like you, Sarah, I started in traditional television and I'm amazed to see what this technology can do that used to take a newsroom of people to do. Mm-hmm. And I just find that so exciting.
That's one of the things I love about that show, The Newsroom, is and I am a hate watcher of The Newsroom, meaning I watch it every week, but I grumble through the entire thing.
Hilarious.
Yeah. But I've worked in many newsrooms. Arguably, I'm still working in our little newsroom here at Twit. It's just that our equipment has gone so digital that it just doesn't take up that much space. There's Brian right back there. It's a one-man show. So you watch The Newsroom, and it's like, there's all these people, and there's the guy, you know, who'll say, like, ready graphics. And it's like, you know, it all seems so antiquated now.
And that exists, right? I mean,
oh,
it's
yeah,
a,
absolutely. It's, Network yeah, it's News is, works just like that. Mm-hmm. Just like that. They're you know, it's quality. The tools are good. It's just we're at the forefront of the next phase.
It's like two parallel universes, Sarah. That's what I feel like sometimes. There's like this online movement towards doing it where it's less expensive, the technology's getting smarter, and then there's this other, you know, gigantic machine running in parallel trying to hold on to the old way of doing things. So hopefully they merge nicely. We'll see.
Absolutely. Quick reminder, we've been mentioning our chat room. It's very active this Friday. Hello, all you chatters. We record the Social Hour live on Fridays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. So if you ever want to, I don't know, what are you doing on Friday afternoon? It might mm-hmm. be nighttime where you are. It might even be tomorrow, depending on where you live. Or you might be on the California coast like me. And it's you know, it's just kind of early afternoon. Join Amber and me. We have a lot of fun. Everything's social. It's a good time. Our website is twit.tv/TSH. So if you don't watch us live, we post our show, you know, pretty soon after the show ends. Every show that we have done from the beginning of the Social Hour universe is in our archive there. And if you want to subscribe to the show, that's sort of the easiest way to watch the show. You just subscribe to a variety of our either video or audio feeds. We have HD feeds. We have small video feed. That's great if you end up watching a lot of content on a mobile device, which is a smaller video file, or maybe an audio feed if you do a lot of commuting or you like to listen to us on your, I don't know, on your walk to the store, that sort of thing. We make it as easy for you as possible to keep up with our show each week. And thanks to everybody who does. All right, before we get into some of our tips and our spotlights and some feedback from all of you, let's take a moment to thank Audible for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. Audible has over 150,000 downloadable titles of books across all types of literature, fiction, nonfiction, periodicals. I'm deep into A Song of Ice and Fire, which is, I already know the story. I know exactly how the book begins and ends because I've seen the show, but I figure, you know, I'm ready to listen to all of those details that cannot actually be, that can't be explained when you're just watching a show. And I got to tell you, once you get into it, you don't even realize you're listening to a book. It's so cool. It's a lot of fun. And I can do that while I'm driving. I commute a lot. I know a lot of you do as well. Or maybe you just have a lot of instances where you're just not in the mood to sit down and read a book, but you don't want to be one of those people who just doesn't read books anymore. You just need a better option. Audible is great for that. If you go to audiblepodcast.com/socialhour, you can get a free book. But even before you do that, you can just kind of click around and see how they categorize all of their books. They've got their bestsellers. They've got their customer favorites. Yeah, editor's picks, but then you can choose by a particular genre. You know, maybe you really like science fiction. Maybe you really like murder mysteries. Maybe you really like romance. We don't care. You can like exactly whatever you want to like, but I guarantee you Audible really, really most likely has it with all those titles. The book that you're interested in should be there. If you want to download an audiobook for free, we want you to try it out. If you haven't tried out the Audible experience, you have to just try it. And then you say, oh, cool, this is like way more fun than I thought it would be. To download an audiobook for free, go to audiblepodcast.com/socialhour. And you can sign up, basically, get a free audiobook, try Audible out. And at the end of the free period, you can say, okay, well, that was fun. And you get to keep that book. Or you sign up for, there are different tiers of accounts. I think the gold membership is the one that Leo suggests. And either way, you get to keep that book. So it's a free book. Take this opportunity now. Go to audiblepodcast.com/socialhour. Claim your book and start audio reading. And thanks to Audible for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour.
Hey, Sarah, yeah. I know we've had, speaking of authors, we've had Margaret Atwood on the show before,
right? Yeah, that was a good get on your part.
It was super fun. I just went to her book launch in Toronto, the Mad Adam book launch. This is, I believe, the third book in her trilogy. But I just found out that it is on Audible. In fact, it just came out. But she has a ton of books on Audible. So if there are any Margaret Atwood fans, she has a lot of her best novels already on Audible. I mean, it looks like there are quite a few here, at least 7 or 8 already.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. What the name of the book was? Mad Adam.
It's Mad Adam.
Yeah.
Yes.
There you go. Right there.
Yeah. Right here. So it's at the top of the list there.
Love it. Narrated by Bernadette Dunn, Bob Walter, and Robbie Damon. Very cool. That's good. That's a very good book pick. Margaret Atwood. She was great. In fact,
yeah.
I would say Margaret Atwood possibly is the single guest we've had where I got the most people going, wow, I can't believe you guys had Margaret Atwood on your show. That is really, I mean, and we've had a lot of great guests, but she is, she's quite a legend.
She's amazing.
Yeah.
It's so funny. At her book launch this week, I was chatting with her briefly afterwards and got her to sign the book. And she came up to me and she said, you know what, we've just released a video game for this book, an app that's a video game. And she kind of dragged me over to the producer of the video game app. And it's just some crazy game that this guy has developed. But she is such a fan of technology, and I just love that about her. You know, she loves thinking about the future and how technology has an impact. She's been involved in so many neat projects like the Long Pen and crowdfunding. She's involved with Wattpad, and she loves tech. So very cool to see, you know, a woman who's in her 70s who just embraces Twitter and all these technology tools, and she's just such a great force. So maybe we'll have to have her back on, actually.
I mean, if she loves tech that much, she can be a guest of ours anytime. Absolutely.
I am with you. All right. So we are going to talk about our hashtag problem, right?
Yes. Amber, I know that a couple of episodes ago we said, okay, we're going to try to take tweets from you and, you know, from Facebook and around the web just more regularly during our show, not just rely on emails and voicemails and videos that you send in, although we want you guys to keep doing that. We just want it to be easier to keep track of the conversation. So we decided, well, our hashtag will be social hour. That's what we just decided. Amber, I'm having a hard time weeding through all of the other social hours that don't really have anything to do with us. I mean, if you look at my Tweetbot stream here, we've got your tweet at the top. Well, that's fine. We've got some people who are out replying to us, but there are lots of social hours that have to do with restaurants and stuff that I don't understand, and definitely things that aren't being relayed to us at all. And to the point where I went in yesterday when I thought, okay, well, let's find some cool tweets that we can incorporate into the show. And there were definitely tweets that I found where I said, oh, they're definitely talking to Amber and me. But it was kind of a mess. And I'm wondering what we should do about this.
It's a good question. I think you're right. I've done some searching on Social Hour, and especially on Fridays, we do get some interesting comments that I'm pretty sure aren't directed at us. But it's a good question. It'd be great if our viewers, our listeners could give us some feedback on this. I know people have had other ideas. Do you have something top of mind, Sarah? Do you have a good strategy?
So the Gadget Priest says just use Twit SH. I think that's tough. I mean, if anything, I'd say TSH, because that's if you look at our website URL.
That's true.
You know, it's twit.tv/TSH, the social hour. I mean, that kind of makes sense. But I looked at that earlier, and TSH is just somewhat bizarre on Twitter. But there are definitely fewer tweets, like the volume is a lot lower. So maybe that's a good idea. But I think, especially since right now, you know, we may not always be shooting our show live on Fridays, but considering that we are at least a little while longer, it's tough because there are so many social hours, sort of like Friday's the day for people to sometimes have little social events that they call social hours. So I don't know. It's a blessing and a curse. We have a popular show name.
I was going to say Twit Social, but it turns out there's free social software called Twit Social. So that might also be a problem.
Well,
but what about, and the social hour is so long, right?
Yeah, that's kind of why we thought social hour, just the meaning is the same and it's just catchier. Mm-hmm. It might have to be something maybe we'll poll some people over the next week or so and come to some sort of a decision next week.
Yeah, I think too. I
thought it was something to bring up because we made a big deal out of it, and I thought, gosh, this is kind of difficult for me.
It's tough.
I don't want to ignore anybody, but it seems like we need a tool within our tool to actually. Mm-hmm. You know what we need? We need social hour verified hashtags.
We do.
Be able to filter by other verified hashtags, so we know that you're talking to us. We don't want to see anything else.
Yeah, I think I know it's tough. I do agree with you. And I think maybe people who are listening or watching might have a good suggestion of what we could do.
Yeah.
Because I know I like social hour, but when we search it, there's just too much stuff out there. It's a bit of a melting pot of different tweets.
Exactly.
It's not pretty.
Well, all right. This is something we'll come to some sort of a consensus, but do let us know. Give us your feedback. In fact, if you use social hour, at least for our live viewers, then at least we'll see a lot of those because they'll sort of rise to the top. But let's move on to something that's a little bit more fun, and that is editing photos with better tools within Google+.
This is really cool. I don't know if you've used Snapseed before.
I love Snapseed.
It's amazing. And now you'll be able to actually edit photos within Google Plus right within your browser using Chrome. The idea being that you will really have full photo editing functionality built in, so you can edit photos on the fly. I love this idea. Great little promo video that they've done to explain how this would work, and just allows you to improve the quality of your photos. I'm sure there's people who are using it already. Lots of great functionality here. And again, just love the idea that this is built in, a built-in experience. So this is our social tip for this week. Sarah, have you used it or tried it yet?
So Snapseed within Google Plus, I don't really use because I don't do a lot of photo uploading to Google Plus. However, I use Snapseed, the app, which before Google actually bought the company that makes Snapseed, makes some other software too. I use the Snapseed photo app, not exclusively, but constantly. It's a really well-made app. There's so much functionality. It really, it puts customization in your hands in a way where it's not as if other apps don't allow you to adjust contrast and white balance and, you know, your yellow levels and, you know, all of that stuff. It's like, in general, the good photo apps all kind of do the same thing. But Snapseed has just a different approach, has different names for its filters. It will allow you to, I think it's sort of just how it arranges its tools that I've always found really fun to use. So I think that anybody who's uploading stuff to Google Plus regularly and wants to make it look better is going to love new Snapseed tools within it.
Yeah, it's very cool. The filters, all that kind of fun stuff. And Sarah, you have a Spotlight, the Twitter Spotify app.
Yeah, I do. So Twitter, there's the Twitter Music app, and that came out, I don't know, it was earlier this year. And the idea was that there's so much being shared on Twitter as far as like what somebody's listening to or an artist themselves that has information that you as a follower of that artist might be interested in. Wouldn't it be nice if Twitter had kind of a standalone experience that was just about music being shared on the network? What's popular? Maybe that Amber, if you said, oh, this is my new favorite song, and you added a link, that would also be part of my social stream. Well, it works really well, but I don't know a lot of people who use the Twitter Music app as the way to discover new music. So Twitter did something pretty smart because Spotify is the biggest streaming music service currently out there right now, and Spotify has a desktop app that allows third-party applications to be added to it, almost like the way Facebook has third-party apps that you can add to your Facebook experience, depending on what you're interested in. For example, in my apps list, I've got Last.fm, which is something that I've added to my Spotify experience. Pitchfork, which is a music magazine that I really like. There's Songkick concerts, so I can know what concerts are coming up, that sort of thing. But now, as of today, I can also add Twitter Music. So I'm actually not a Spotify user, Amber. I'm an RDO user, but it's basically the same thing. And Spotify is more popular, and they're the one who have the ad platform. And so Twitter Music now is just a part within my Spotify experience on the desktop. It's not actually part of the mobile apps yet. None of the Spotify apps are. But this makes so much more sense to me. If I'm a Spotify user, well, I don't want to leave Spotify in order to see what people are talking about on Twitter. What's neat about this is that Twitter bought a company called We Are Hunted some time ago. And this is, it looks like it's the effort of that team. So you've got your popular music. So this is stuff that's just in general popular. It's being shared a lot on Twitter. A lot of these artists, I don't really know any of these people. I was going to say, this is just stuff that's popular right now for whatever reason. Although, if you go to the superstars area, these are probably more familiar. Yeah, these are like the Justin Timberlakes, the Lady Gagas, the Jay-Z's. But then what's neat about Twitter Music, and this is actually something that when I gave the music app a spin some months ago, I thought it was really cool, was I was discovering artists that I definitely had never heard of. And I'm not sure how I would find these artists on Spotify otherwise, because I don't even know to search for them. But on Twitter, it's kind of like, oh, this is somebody that, you know, it's maybe a rising star, and you kind of can get familiar with them before they become like a next Katy Perry. It works really very well. Cool. Yeah, and if you're a Spotify user, these aren't just little snippets of the songs; they're the entire song. So, I don't know, Amber. What do you think of Twitter Music? Do you think this is the right place to get music recommendations?
You know, it's so funny. I don't think I've really thought of Twitter Music since we probably mentioned Twitter Music on the show.
Yeah.
But I love this idea. I mean, I think this looks really neat. And I mean, I'm all for any of these services. I, like you, use Ardio a lot more. So that's what I tend to depend on. But I think this is neat. I think it's very cool to see this integration. But Sarah, I have to admit that I'm also especially interested in the second spotlight you've added to the rundown. And I'm kind of anxious to get to it because I haven't clicked on the link yet. And I'm just imagining what exactly this means.
Okay, so this is a very short, regular podcast called Gingercast. And when I say short, it's because the whole thing is conducted on Vine, where you only have 6 seconds. And the two hosts of the cast happen to both have red hair. So, you know, Gingercast, or reddish hair, I guess. And it is hysterical. So, Brian, turn on, because the audio is off by default. If you hover over one of these, and just go ahead and turn it on.
Microsoft's holding a September 23rd Surface 2 event. Expect a lot of...
That was Gingercast. This is Gingercast.
And of course it loops because that's just sort of funny.
This is the Gingercast.
This phone reads my finger.
That was the Gingercast.
It's hysterical.
Oh my goodness, that's so funny.
This is the Gingercast.
Twitter's planning an IPO for all the money.
That was the Gingercast.
Oh my goodness.
And when you, at first you're like, okay, I guess I see what they're doing there. But I mean, they put up a lot of these videos and they're only 6 seconds. So it's kind of funny because it is real news. These, by the way, are both people who work at Wired. So they're very tuned in with, you know, what the tech news of the day is. And it's hysterical.
Hilarious.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Aren't you noticing, too? You...
Samsung Galaxy Gear, $300 for a smartwatch the size of your face on your wrist.
That was Gingercast.
I love it. I'm noticing, too, with any of these short little podcasts that I'm seeing out there. I mean, this is kind of more of a joke in some ways, but even with The Verge, they have a short little show that they do, which I think is like 90 seconds, which is the latest headlines. It's amazing how short and concise and these little bite-sized pieces of information, but I don't think I've seen anything quite this short yet.
I mean, honestly, this is really the only thing I've ever seen on Vine where I'm like, this is awesome. You know, I love the fact that they can't go long, so they have to, you know, talk really fast, and, you know, it makes it... This is a Tumblr blog, and so I subscribe to this to this Tumblr, and I'm also subscribing to their Twitter feed, Gingercast, because I don't want to miss anything. But it's like I really look forward to these. I think that they're really creative. It's fun that they're short. I can't wait to see what they're going to talk about next because they have to, you know, say it really quick and not that many words, and it's cool. It's very creative.
I feel like you've listened to it a lot because you just said, this is a Tumblr blog when you were mentioning that. So it kind of gets in your head, right?
Yeah.
It's like a jingle that you can't get rid of. Now I'm going to be saying everything like that all night.
This is Sojar.
Yeah, this is Sojar. This is great. I love this. This is awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
That's so bad. But that's very cute. I love that.
So gingercast.tumblr.com if you want to watch more of them. They've got, I don't know, 50 or so episodes and just getting started. Go Gingers. Hey, tech podcasters, we all have to stick together, whether you're an hour like us or 6 seconds like you or somewhere in between.
They're just more concise.
That's right. Exactly. All right, let's take a quick break and thank SAP for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. Of course, SAP is perfect for us because they make a product called Social Media Solutions, which helps companies, perhaps like yours, use social media, all sorts of social media, to improve their customer service and their support processes. These days, everything's happening on social media. I mean, whether you're a brand or you're an individual, I mean, that's where we're all talking to each other. But if you're a brand, you might be one brand and you have all these people talking about you, maybe on their blogs, maybe on Twitter, maybe on Facebook, maybe it's on, they're giving your product a review somewhere. It's like you have to make sense of all of that and make sure that you're responding to people if they have questions or they have issues and people are happy with your product. And if they're not, how to change things. two components in that is listening, of course, listening to what the people are saying, and then responding to them, engaging with them. As you listen, social media solutions from SAP will capture reports on all of the conversations that are out there online. You can build better products because you can incorporate real-time customer feedback. People will be impressed, like, wow, this company is really on top of it. They respond, they got back to me right away. We've seen when brands do that well, Amber and I have talked about this, and we've definitely seen where brands have not done that well. And you think, who's running the show behind the scenes at this company? How could they have not issued a response yet? So the engaging component is the next step of that. You've listened, you know what everyone's saying, you've got your reports there. Now you want to improve your customer service and support. You want to make sure that the person on your team that is designated to provide tech support is getting all of the tech support questions that are coming in from the internet. Activity on the social media stream, Twitter, Facebook, they can lead to direct customer engagement if you know what you're doing, because by engaging, you'll drive sales. By engaging, you can solve your customer problems. You can respond to customer feedback quickly. And if somebody's mad, if they've posted a negative review somewhere, you just remedy that problem. And then you have a happy customer who walks away with their problem fixed and thinks, geez, I'm so glad that company was listening to me. They care. So this is all very, very important stuff. Social media solutions from SAP gives you more than marketing by improving the customer service and support experience. If you're interested, if you work in social media marketing, you know who you are. Maybe you don't. Maybe you know somebody. It's like, they really should see this product. This might be perfect for them. Maybe you've listened to a friend say, gosh, my job is getting harder and harder as all the social media stuff grows and grows. Go to sap.com/twit. Take a guided tour. See for yourself how social media solutions from SAP works and can work for your company as well. Make your life easier. Make you do your job better. And thanks to SAP for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. All right, Amber, have you seen the hot video that everybody's talking about on the internet, the Chipotle commercial featuring Fiona Apple singing a song from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory?
I have only seen a snippet, so I've read a lot about it. It seems like they have done it again, another amazing campaign.
Yeah, Chipotle, of course, was known for, it was Willie Nelson singing a Coldplay song, right? And I think it premiered on, you know, maybe a Super Bowl a couple years ago. And everybody went, well, that, you know, it really tugged at heartstrings. And the whole message was, hey, fast food doesn't have to be bad food. It doesn't have to be mass-produced with full of chemicals and poorly treated animals. And it was really regarded as one of the nicest commercials ever made. They are definitely at it again. This is Chipotle's latest, I guess you'd call it a viral video. It's a commercial. The whole thing is, I mean, it's basically an entire song. And the whole idea is that scarecrows are no longer, you know, watching over the crops in the farms. They've, you know, become these corporate workers for a large corporation called, I think it's like Crow Inc., you know, and the crows are mean and don't care about not only the scarecrows but the produce and the meat that they're pushing, and the animals really sad. I mean, Amber, I sat and watched the whole thing, and it's like, I know that there's a message, and I know that Chipotle is a for-profit company, and there's that whole, you know, corporate intent, but it's really effective.
I don't know if I've
seen anything so nice.
I totally agree with you. It seems like this is a promo to promote their free app that they have, as far as I know.
You see it at the end.
Yeah, so the idea within the app is the same sort of premise, though, to just educate people a little bit more about factory farming and getting back to that idea about nutrition and fresh veggies and all those things. I love what they're doing. I mean, I've been a big fan since they had that previous commercial that they put out, which we talked a lot about it on the Social Hour in the past. And, you know, even if they are a for-profit company, I just feel as though, you know, they're trying so hard. They're definitely going that extra distance to try to be a better company. And I think a lot of brands fall short in that department. And I'm a huge fan. I haven't played the game yet, so I haven't downloaded the app, but It looks kind of awesome. And based on the link, it seems as though you can also win free burritos. So you can't be all that bad.
Oh, that's, well, I mean, free burritos. You're speaking my language now. This, I actually tweeted about this earlier. So some people who follow me on Twitter may have already watched this video if you clicked on the link. And, you know, it's interesting because there aren't that many brands. Sometimes a brand will do something, and we'll talk about that on the Twitter, and we'll say, yeah, that was a great giving back to the community or good message, but nothing that really makes me feel emotional, and this definitely does, and I know that it's supposed to, and, you know, so good on whoever made the video. I mean, it looks really good, but it's, you know, it's supposed to make you feel sad about the state of how a lot of large corporations who make food get the food to us. And make you think about, well, let's do something better. And what are the other alternatives? And Chipotle, I know as a company, has said they want to get to a 0% GMO in their food at some point in the near future. That's genetically modified. What's the O for? I'm having a Friday moment. But basically, you know, food that isn't natural. And I think that's wonderful. I think that if, and I know that there's probably people just waiting for Chipotle to slip up, you know, and if we see that they have, we'll hear about that too. But if that's really the mantra of a large corporation, to be able to feed a lot of people fast, cheap food that tastes good.
And healthy.
Yeah, that is healthy and minimizes all of the bad stuff and the implied suffering that goes along with this kind of food. Kudos to them. I am all for it. I think that's wonderful.
Yeah. So it's a genetically modified organism, but
organism.
Yes. But yeah, on this front, I also think it's very cool what they do, in the sense that I think that it isn't just like one campaign they put out there. It isn't just a video. Even when they did that song with Lily Nelson, where he did the cover play, or sorry, the Coldplay cover song, they donated all of the funds from the sale of that song to their foundation that promotes ethical farming. And they also, with this, it looks like, you know, they really live what they're trying to put out there, you know, in the sense that they follow through on everything that they put into their marketing messages. And I don't think all companies do that. So I'm a huge fan. I think this is just awesome and really a benchmark for how other companies can step up.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's very cool.
Go Chipotle. And the song will get in your head. Some of you were hearing me sing it before. I mean, if you have watched the 1970 whatever version of Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory with Gene Wilder, you already know the song. But this Fiona Apple version might be a viral hit all on its own, Amber.
It's true. I bet it could. Now, this next story, Sarah, is about Twitter. This is from The Verge, talking about some laws in China where 500 retweets could mean 3 years in prison because they are trying to fight against the spread of online rumors.
Yeah, exactly. The Chinese government announced basically these are anti-defamation laws. So the idea is that if you have a platform like Twitter, and you say something that is defaming someone else and it picks up enough traction, well, it's not the same thing as you just saying it once on a street corner and one person hears. You know what you're doing. You're using a mode of communication that's spreading defamation quicker. Reuters reports that users who post false rumors that are widely circulated on the internet, 500 retweets or more, could face up to 3 years in jail. This is the standard sentence for violating China's defamation laws. This is a ruling that was handed down earlier this week. China's high court determined people whose rumors are reposted at least 500 times or viewed at least 5,000 times would be liable for prosecution. Sounds like this is obviously their. This is new, and and it sounds like it. You know, if you're liable for prosecution, it's hopefully a case by case basis, which could be potentially pretty messy. But yeah, court spokesman Sun Zhonggong told reporters that people have been hurt, and reaction in society has been strong, demanding with one voice serious punishment by the law for criminal activities like using the internet to spread rumors and defame people. No country would consider the slander of other people as freedom of speech. I have to say, well, you certainly don't want anybody to be wrongly convicted of anything like this. Hopefully, the people who are handing down sentences understand in great detail how these internet tools work. You know, if somebody can somehow show that you've had something retweeted 500 times, gosh, I mean, maybe that doesn't even have anything to do with your following as much as, I mean, I could have three followers tweet something, randomly get retweeted by somebody who's legitimately famous, and then get into a lot of trouble. You know, it's kind
this of- is what I don't understand. It's like, I mean, it's the initial person who is sending those messages is getting judged based on how far they travel, how far that content travels.
Right.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yes, that's exactly right. And that's really hard to say. I mean, at some point, it's kind of out of your hands on Twitter, right? I mean, something can go completely bonkers just the same way you can, I don't know, get on the front page of Reddit and all of a sudden a bunch of people are coming to your blog and it's like, you hear about that all the time. People saying, "I, you know, that video was up for a year and then all of a sudden it was really popular and yeah, I don't know who did that," or I'm trying to find the link to the source of all this traffic. Or, you know, I guess you could sort of compare it to the argument that if somebody illegally downloads a movie using your Wi-Fi network and you're in trouble because that's illegal activity that's based on your account, but it wasn't really you. I mean, we have that problem constantly where people are saying, you know, an internet IP address is not a person. That's just a computer. That's that, you know, you can't actually... You can't prove that it's a one-to-one type of a thing.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to also, I'm sure it scares people away from going on and tweeting anything, you know, just not knowing how far it's going to travel. It just seems like a scare tactic in many ways and not really all that effective. So not a surprise, but I do find it interesting that the number is 500 retweets. I'm curious how they got to that point of deciding that was the point where you're going to get in trouble. I can't even imagine, you know, what type of content you would have to post to get retweeted that many times. But it seems like a very bizarre number versus focusing on the actual content.
Yeah.
Very strange.
I mean, 500 retweets sounds like a ton of retweets to me.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if I tweet something and it gets retweeted 20 times, I'm like, oh, look, something struck a nerve, you know? But
yeah.
But then again, you know, with a big movie star, it's probably nothing. So yeah, I'd love to know how they decided 500. That is our mark. That is when
you're
really doing something wrong here.
Yeah, exactly.
You're truly defaming that person. You got to 500 retweets.
All right, yes.
Well, let's move on to our social marketing spotlight of the week.
Okay, so this is kind of interesting. This is from Colgate, and it's one of those things I think that is a big pet peeve of mine is if I have food in my mouth and someone doesn't tell me, if food in my teeth, I should say, and I'm hoping as friends or colleagues would tell me that that was the case. Well, it looks as though if you don't like telling someone they have food in their teeth, although I think you always should, then you have a chance to alert them anonymously by this little tool called There's Something in Your Tweet, which Colgate has developed to allow you to send a tweet anonymously to someone. You can also email people who are non-tweeters. So if you're in the office and I'm using their example, someone has super healthy kale in their teeth, then you can let them know.
Wait a second. So
yeah.
you and I are sitting, we're having burritos at Chipotle. Yeah. And I, you know, I've got a lot of cilantro in my burrito and all of a sudden I've got cilantro in my teeth. And so you decide instead of saying you got a little something there, you tweet, I get a tweet from somebody. Ooh, I wonder who it is telling me that I have something in my teeth.
Yeah. Very strange. Very strange.
And so I look across at you and I'm like, you passive aggressive co-host.
Well, exactly. I mean, I think this has to be a case where I'm hoping they did this kind of tongue in cheek, you know, it's just sort of a cute way of getting people talking about their tool and getting people talking about Colgate.
Yeah.
I love There's Something in Your Tweet, you know, as a service. And it's kind of interesting in the sense that they are talking about something that happens all the time. You know, colleagues go out to lunch, someone has something in their teeth and it's always just the one person who says something. Some people don't like to say anything. So, talking about etiquette and, getting people thinking about teeth and toothpaste, it's kind of a clever use, but I don't think from a practical standpoint it's something that people are going to use all the time, unless it's a joke and you're all friends, right?
Yeah, I can see this. You know, it's good for like a chuckle here or there. Or especially, you know, what it could be something like, oh, maybe you did point out to me, Sarah, you have some cilantro in your teeth, and I go, oh dear, and I have a glass of water, and then it's all done. And then later I get that tweet, and we both sort of go like, Yep, I know. You know, that was funny. And then, and Colgate basically provides the vehicle for us to have our little chuckle. So, yeah, it's probably not really a very effective tool for actually getting people to get things out of their teeth. Unless it's that office person who you figure, I mean, that pepper's going to be there all day, and I just cannot bring myself to say something. And then this would be your alternative.
But it's so embarrassing to think of using it, because I'm like you. I imagine sitting in the office and then the person gets up and looks around and doesn't know who sent it. It has a bit of a creepy factor in some ways.
A little bit. You know, it's obviously somebody who's looked in my mouth recently.
Yeah. Or you just want to send it to everyone as a joke just to get people all self-conscious. Maybe at the same time you send it to everyone in the office. And then everybody starts checking their teeth. I don't know. Anyway, it's kind of cute. So I thought it was worth a spotlight just to talk about it and to see how some marketing campaigns, sometimes I don't think they're necessarily that practical, but I do think that it gets people opening up a conversation, especially about something that is an issue, I'm sure, across offices all over the U.S. and beyond.
Yeah, it would kind of be funny to see. I can see this being like a classroom prank. You know, who can get the teacher to look at, try to stealthily check her teeth in the mirror because she's gotten an anonymous tweet from one of the students saying that she has something in her teeth.
See, that's
or
the thing.
He. It's male teachers get stuff in their teeth too.
Yeah. It's more of a prank though. And I agree with their example of kale. That's a big problem.
Oh yeah. No, there are certain things that I feel like I have teeth covered in glue half the time. I really get stuff stuck in my teeth, I think, more than the average person. It's part of, the Lane genes or something. So this is something that I think about food in my teeth a lot. And there's certain things I don't want to eat in front of other people because I'm like, this is just going to be a mess. And they're not going to say anything, and I'm going to seem ridiculous, and they won't listen to a word I'm saying. They're going to just be looking at that cilantro.
Yeah. No, I'm totally with you. So that's our spotlight of the week. And also, I know there's a lot of people who listen and watch the show who are in the social marketing space. You mentioned this before, Sarah. So if you have anything that you've worked on, a really creative campaign that maybe we haven't seen yet, I mean, we're all for mentioning different examples and putting the spotlight on some really neat stuff out there. So please do let us know, because I know there's a lot of creative ideas that sometimes don't get picked up on the Ad Ages and other websites out there.
Absolutely. Yes. Do let us know. And speaking of hearing from you, we would love you to write us if you feel like sending us an email. thesocialhour@twit.tv is how you can send us an email, or leave us a voicemail. 2626-SOCIAL, 2626, SOCIAL. That is our Google Voice inbox. Leave us a message. We will play it on a future show. You can record a video. You can send us a tweet. I mean, We don't really care as long as you send us your ideas. So this can be a collaborative social hour indeed. All right, before we get to Amber's Rad or Fad, we want to thank Tonks. They are our third sponsor of the Social Hour. Tonks is great because they make you wonderful coffee. Really, they do. They roast the beans for you, and then they send you those beans within 72 hours of roasting. Then you get shipped within 24 hours. Pardon me, I'm getting ahead of myself. Shipped within 24 hours, giving you the freshest beans in the world. What's neat about this is that the Tonks people, I have relationships with coffee growers all over the world, and it's a seasonal thing. I mean, certain types of the year are great for, you know, Colombian coffee. Certain types of the year are great for coffee in Costa Rica or Kenya. You know, the list goes on, and the Tonks people know all about that, so you don't really have to pay too much attention to it. You've probably had a really amazing cup of coffee at an artisan coffee shop, and you go, wow, I mean, it must be because they have really state-of-the-art equipment, and, you know, they've got these baristas who have been trained in coffee. And the truth is, it's really just about the beans. That's the most important ingredient as far as making coffee. If you've got fresh beans that are roasted recently, that haven't been sitting on a shelf somewhere getting stale, that aren't already ground, you do not want to buy pre-ground beans because they're basically, you know, their aroma is half gone already. Tonks is the way to go. What's neat, not only are they shipped within 24 hours of roasting, but, you know, I said 72 hours because that's actually, if you read a lot of coffee blogs, which I do, that's the sweet spot of, you know, between the time it roasts and the time that you actually make the coffee, because it lets the beans breathe a little bit. What Tonks is a bi-weekly subscription. So, okay, they know all about beans, they roast beans, they send you beans, but they send it to you in sort of this perfect little schedule, so that right about the time you're running out of beans, your beans are kind of, yeah, you're sort of down to the scraps, you get another batch of beans, best beans on earth, directly to your door. Amber, you mentioned you're on the coffee kick again. So this would be like such a neat gift if somebody wanted to surprise you and say, you know what, you don't even have to think about coffee anymore. You're getting a bi-weekly subscription from Tonks.
And you know what? Also, and I know your weather is probably not cooling down as quickly as ours is, but especially if you live on the East Coast going into the fall, it's a perfect time to walk around, you know, nice warm sweater. I think we had that hipster guy image on last week, Sarah, but that's kind of what it's like in my neighborhood in Toronto, where you have your coffee so you can make it at home now, save some money, and have some really good coffee for walking around in this cooler weather.
Yeah. Every 2 weeks, new batch of incredible beans. Roasted precisely to perfection, subscription only. But if you're interested and you're like, you know what? I think I know a thing or two about coffee. How good is this Tonks anyway? Tonks is offering a free sample to the Social Hour viewers and listeners. Go to tonks.org/social hour, tonx.org/social hour. Get some beans for yourself, or maybe you're like, you know what? I'm good, but I know somebody who loves them some coffee. Send it to somebody you know who appreciates coffee, and you're guaranteed to be the hero because Tonks is good stuff. This is great coffee. Once again, tonks.org/social hour, and thanks to Tonks for sponsoring us. All right, Amber, what's on the coffee bar for this Ratter Fed? I don't know. I tried. And
that
failed.
Was good, Sarah. That was good.
It was the worst.
That was good.
All right.
Okay. So this is something that I haven't seen before. I read the article on TechCrunch, and it's an app called Inbox, although I can't find a link to it. So I'm thinking it's just in demo mode right now, because I think it was first announced at TechCrunch Disrupt. And the idea is it's not for your email, because we've seen so many different apps that are for your email. This is for your SMS messages. Uh-huh. So this is a way that people can better organize their SMS messages. Now, if you actually click on the link that goes to the Inbox site where they describe what they do, they say, texting is broken. We're here to fix it. We are Inbox. Down the page, when you look at the features, they mention some things that they have, things like you can shake your phone for privacy. So if you get a text message and someone nearby is looking at your phone, you just, you know, casually shake your phone and it goes into privacy mode, which is kind of neat. And other private viewing experiences. And they have a whole other bunch of neat things that are great for people who really find that their SMS experience is maybe a little crowded, a little cluttered, and they want a better way to organize it.
You know, somebody in chat, Ticking Time Lord, says, how is texting broken? And I actually think this is a great idea. It, just in the same way that we've all sort of gotten used to, you may use the native web interface on your free email application of choice. But in general, I prefer to read, you know, my Gmail through an app called Mailbox for iOS. And If I'm on my desktop, then I'm looking at it a different way. But there are so many different skins, basically, to read the same messages in email. But no one's really done that for SMS before. And yeah, you could say, well, is it really that hard to read when a text comes in? But it's sort of one of these reimagining things that I think something like Inbox is really smart for doing, because nobody's really thought about that before. It's kind of like, well, again, I'm reading the majority of my texts on my iPhone. Sometimes I read them on my iPad if I happen to be holding them and a text comes in. But it's all the exact same sort of bubble window back and forth. And if I have, let's say you and I have a text conversation going on between the two of us, Sarah and Amber, got it. Okay, well, that's sort of archived in one area. And then if you and I and Brian decide, oh, we're going to have like a group text. Well, that's a whole different thing. But I don't necessarily, you know, sometimes I'll forget. This happens to me all the time because I do a lot of texting. Did Amber mention that the name of that restaurant in the group text or the one that was private between the two of us? Because those are two different conversations. They're not linked at all. Yeah. So, if, you know, there are already problems that I come across where I'm like, texting needs a little bit more organization. It's kind of like the next phase of wanting to achieve some sort of a semblance of email sanity.
Yeah, and they also have a Snapchat-like feature where you can take back photos that you've sent, and they say they're gone forever. Who knows about that? But nonetheless, I mean, even the way they explain the app and their website, I mean, it's absolutely gorgeous. And I think about texting in my own experience and realize that most of the people who text with me are people who are closest to me in my life. And I do find some days, you know, I've texted from so many different people, and it is hard to keep track of everything. So I like the idea of improving that experience and having that as almost like a priority messaging and a way to be able to organize it in just a better, more user-friendly and beautiful way. And it seems like they do this. So I like it. I think it's kind of rad.
I think it's rad too. I'm excited to use it. It seems like it's certainly looks like it's designed well. And yeah, that's
very pretty.
Yeah, I can't wait to use it. Inbox. You know, Amber, I have to point this out because it's just hysterical. While we were talking about your rad or fad, I got a tweet from something in your tweet saying, Sarah Lane, a friend asked me to tell you there's cilantro stuck in your teeth. This coupon will help. Aha, I say, oh gosh, it was from the burrito I ate for lunch. And then I click on the coupon and sure enough, I can save $1 on a new Colgate Slim Soft toothbrush.
Hey, $1 is pretty good on a toothbrush though.
Well played, Colgate. Well played.
I didn't know about the coupon. I like that.
Yeah. That's good times.
Incentive now.
Good times. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for helping us understand how these social marketing messages come to life.
That is awesome. I love it. I should also say, Sarah, just with the Inbox app, that they say that it will be in the Apple App Store in the next week or so.
Oh,
so
great.
They say an Android app will follow. They always say that. Who knows when it will come out? But just so everybody knows, if you're looking for it in there. And Sarah, that hold or something in your tweet thing, now I'm thinking that a lot of people are going to use that to get their dollar off.
Well, it's, stranger things have happened. Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited about Inbox. I'll definitely take it for a whirl on i5 once it's an iPhone app. And I hope it works really well. I hope it makes SMS just the best experience ever. It'd be fun. You know, I've got iOS 7 coming out, and I've got this, and, you know, everything's about to change, at least for the Apple people. I know that there are a lot more of you Android people than there are Apple people, so there you go. Well, instead of delving into some fanboy argument that I definitely don't want to get into with you, Amber, I think we should say that was one successful social hour and wrap it up. Reminder to everybody who watches us live, we're live on Fridays when we record the show at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. Our website is twit.tv/TSH. That's where you can keep up all the shows we've done in the past. You might have missed. You might want to watch again and so on. Go, look at that. The first social hour. That was back when we were in the cottage and I used to run the TD station and I didn't really like doing it very much. And I looked weird and you looked pretty. And, some things never change. Amber, do you have anything awesome coming up in the next week?
Gee, that's a really good question. I feel as though, you know, in the fall, things really ramp up. So I'm super busy this weekend. I just have a couple of different events to go to. And that's pretty much it. You know, nothing too major. So it's all good, Sarah. All good. No traveling for the next few weeks. So that makes me very happy.
Well, excellent. Have a wonderful week. I know I'll see you online. And to everybody else, thanks for watching The Social Hour. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber McCarthy. And we'll see you soon.